Jared.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you, Commissioner, for inviting me to this esteemed panel, and this has been very informative throughout the entire day here. I'm going to be addressing the impact of corporate contributions on the state and local level. And I'm going to just first address that Maryland has always allowed corporate contributions. We just don't allow corporations to run for political office because they are not a person for that purposes. And when Citizens United came out, I remember all the press calls that was coming in because now it was such a heightened awareness among the press corps, and it had really no impact on the state of Maryland's giving process because we've always allowed corporations to give and to make independent expenditures. But since then, it definitely changed. And I'm going to give you a little case study about how difficult it is and kind of with the other panel and everyone here being such professors on with the in law schools, it reminds me of my one professor's quote about the you don't let the nose of the camel inside the tent type of deal. Once it's in there, it's very difficult to get out. And corporations and corporate contributions is definitely that type of being here. So like I said, Maryland has always allowed corporate contributions, and we had an attribution rule in place which said that wholly owned subsidiaries of a corporation, and if the corporation had identical shareholders, they would be considered as one contributor. Now, this makes sense and everything. And this is since the dawn of the time. In the 90s, LLCs came into existence and into corporate law in Maryland. The powers that be and everyone asked, well, are LLCs a part of this attribution rule? And the Office of the Attorney General at the time said no. LLCs have to be considered separate entities, and they're not a part of the attribution rule because when the law was written, it was written saying corporations and LLCs are not corporations. This became the LLC loophole in the state of Maryland here. And basically, everyone, it was the most popular form of corporate structure, especially for small business owners, developed many LLCs. And they were able to give to politicians over their contribution limits. And this is, it existed for years out there. And it had such a significant impact on local and state elections, which was making it virtually impossible for it to ever get changed. And there was years of it constantly in front of the General Assembly to close this loophole. And I was going through some of the comments online, too, that I with the FEC, hashtag FEC forum. And one of the things was about how corporate contributions are insignificant. If that's the case, then they wouldn't make it. Of course, corporate contributions are significant, and they have an impact here. Large developers in the state of Maryland used to typically set up many LLCs, and, you know, for legitimate reasons to control their various interests. And they then contributed that they controlled to their candidates. They formed basically clusters of giving power to increase their political clout. And this ranged into the hundreds of thousands of dollars to specific entities and to specific candidates. I mean, the corporations, corporate contributions, you know, targeted the correct elections to maximize their effect at the state and local level. So I think that it would be, while it may be insignificant as a figure compared to, say, overall giving to a candidate by individuals, its impact is probably greater than that, because one person giving $25 versus a person giving $100,000, they controlled all those interests there. And I think corporate money is kind of like the original dark money in a sense here, because you don't necessarily know how this decision was made, who really speaks for the corporation, and the public just kind of looks at it and goes, it's just a name. And most of these LLCs or corporations have names that no one even knows about, and then they go in and they get a registered agent there. So it was really the first form. Even though it was disclosed and you could try to find it, it takes a long time there. So flash forward now from the 90s all the way to 2013, which we basically, when the LLC loophole was finally closed, and the law was only effective after the 2014 general election. So they wanted to make sure that they got one last election with the LLC loophole. And this law that we passed in Maryland was passed with bipartisan support. So this is not something now that was a Republican or a Democratic issue. I think that the states now have taken the mantle of this for disclosure and reform in a bipartisan effort here. And the close now is that we then changed it to all business entities so that we don't care what structure they are, LLC, LLP, corporations, anything, that if they're owned or controlled by 80% of the same individuals, they're considered one contributor now. Along the lines here, the idea then, there was a ban on casino interests as well. I received many, concerns about, well, if one corporation in this person's control is a casino, will it affect, say, their dry cleaning business if they want to give to me on an unrelated manner? And the answer is yes. Once the ban was attached to all the contributors, then it affects all of them. That wasn't the most popular response because they still wanted a lot of the money there. So, but once you have big money entering into the political process, it is nearly impossible to get it out, or its corrupting influences on it, because campaigns constantly get more expensive. The last cycle is the floor. It's not the ceiling anymore, because then they look around and go, well, if I took, $100,000 to win, my opponent's going to raise $150,000, so therefore I have to now look at it and raise $200,000. So it's always kind of like an increasing arms race there. And so once they know that they have an access to money from one contributor that can give tens of thousands of dollars, then of course they can easily raise that in their mind. And if you cut off those sources for that, it has an impact on their ability to raise money, and then they have to say, well, now I have to go out and get, the legal limit from 20 people, or I have to go out a little bit harder. The other thing too is that I wanted to say about how the states are taking this responsibility, I think, about corporations and shareholders in a new light. I think that they used to look at the federal side and say, well, that used to be the shining model of disclosure and activity for compliance, and the states were always the let almost anything go. Now I think the roles have kind of flipped here. For example, with independent expenditures in the state of Maryland, if you're an entity that makes an independent expenditure in our state for a state or local election, and you have shareholders, you have to submit your activity to the shareholders on their regular shareholder report, so that the shareholders will have some knowledge about that. I think I wanted to talk about a little bit. One of the questions here was, like, what can the FEC do? How can they build a record about this? And I can say that, how this change came about. I can talk about the fact that we had two commissions to study campaign finance law, one by the Attorney General, another one by the General Assembly, or that outside groups did reports about how much money was passed through the loophole, which in one 4-year cycle was $5 million in a very small state of Maryland, which, as you can see, had a significant impact there. Or that the press was very knowledgeable about this loophole. But in the end, it was really the Citizens United case. I think that the Citizens United case, even in a state where it had no effect prior, after its ruling, made legislators rethink and take a look about corporate influence. And I think that in their mind, because everyone looked at the federal model, you had a lot of people go, oh, of course corporations can never give because the federal law prohibits corporations from giving. Once Citizens United had opened up, and it was always in the press that corporations can give, corporate owners felt a little bit more secure about giving in state and local elections, and that they weren't going to run afoul of everything. And the other thing, too, is that I'm an optimist in these situations here. Campaign finance has gone through a depending on how you feel about it, major changes in the last decade or so. And I think that one of the things about it is that on the state and local levels, it is more of a bipartisan issue than on the federal level. And the reason for it is because of the impacts that they have been doing to themselves as legislators with redistricting. Redistricting has made every district now a safe district. Before, you used to always have to worry about, what the Democrat or the Republican is doing in your own district there. Now, you are more worried about your challenges from your own party, whether it's from the left or from the right, and that the general election is almost predetermined at that point there for the outcome. So legislators are now looking at it and saying, well, I want to know what my opponent is doing. And their opponent is more in their party than ever before. So, which is why I think we were able to pass such a comprehensive campaign finance reform with greater disclosure on dark money, with C4 activities, with 527 activities, with rapid disclosure on super PAC activities within 48 hours. All these reforms and greater disclosure and enforcement laws was because they were looking at it in their own light and saying, well, I want to know what's going on in my election that matters to me the most. And before I leave, I just want to talk a little bit about foreign influence here. Now, foreign influence we can all agree that I think that we never want a foreign government to influence our elections or have the ability to change our political discourse. Maryland is unique in one scenario here. We have a town that actually allows non-citizens to vote and participate in a municipal election. They can go out and vote for mayor, but it's against federal law right now for a person in that town that's living there to give a $5 donation to the candidate that they choose. Also, nationally, we've been passing a lot of Dream Acts. There's the Dreamers out there. Now, maybe they have a right, maybe they don't have a right to participate in the electoral process, but they're here. They want to participate in this process here. This is not a national government trying to push their own agenda in our political process here. These are people that, in the Dream Act, pay taxes. So they are actually, should they be able to give money to a ballot initiative? These are some questions now, I think, that as we go forward, I think we need to address, and that foreign nationals is a different subject from when it was first, I guess, thought of in the 1930s or in the 40s when there was a war and we wanted to make sure about that. So with that, I just wanted to show that how it took forever, but it did take, we did get it done to limit or corporate influences on the electoral process here, which is why I'm an optimist in these situations here. I think that as the people from the states move up through the ranks, the rules that they play with on the state level, they want to bring to the next election, because then they're going to say, well, this worked And this is not something that I couldn't win in, or it wouldn't have a negative impact on it. And they're going to take that, I hope, bipartisanship and, I guess, disclosure and reform attitude up to the next levels, to the federal side. And with that, I'll move over.